Hey, folks, guess what? Storyworthy is now dropping twice a week.
Twice? What, does this mean more work?
It's double the work is what it is, actually.
Oh.
But two brand new true stories coming at you every week from the Storyworthy podcast.
I guess that is good because that's twice as much me.
Twice as much me.
I'm sorry, my earphones are cutting out. What did you say? So tell your friends, tell your families, tell your enemies, tell everybody. Twice a week. Twice.
Hey, you guys. This episode of Storyworthy is brought to you by GoDaddy. Don't let someone steal your great idea. Register a domain name now and put your idea online. GoDaddy's offering one new or transfer.com for the low price of $2.95. So whether you're building your dream business or starting a website for fun, visit GoDaddy.com and enter the code STORY295 at checkout. Some limitations apply. See website for details. Don't forget, you guys, visit GoDaddy.com and enter the code STORY295 at checkout, and you are supporting this podcast.
Hi, this is John Mathot, the co-host of Horrible Movie Night at the Nerd Melt Theater in Hollywood, California, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Hey! Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finn.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finney, and we're coming to you from the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. Specifically, we're in the office, we're by in the office of Mayo Clinic President John H. Noseworthy, MD. Mostly because Dr. Noseworthy, yes.
Okay.
And if he is not a nose, throat, and ear specialist, I will be very disappointed.
The ENT, you mean. Ears, nose, and throat.
Ear, nose, and throat,
you
exactly.
You have to say it like in... I think it always goes that way because your ears are the highest thing up, right? And then your nose, and then your throat. Is that how it goes?
Exactly. And, of course, we are also here because he has the word worthy in his name.
Oh, right.
So he
course.
Really is a big fan of Story Worthy. Hello, I'm Dr. Noseworthy, he wrote to us. And I said, listen, you fucking asshole, we have got enough trouble. And then it turned out he is the president of the Mayo Clinic.
And so, also, we don't have any trouble.
No, we have no trouble at all.
Okay, so why would we be at the Mayo Clinic? Tell
us
that. Because
our topic tonight is food poisoning.
Food poisoning. Although I have to say, Hannes, if you get food poisoning, I don't think you have to rush off to the Mayo Clinic.
Well, that would depend on what you ate.
Extreme, yeah, exactly.
For instance, somewhere in Minnesota, there might be some bad pike.
Oh,
or perhaps some walleye. You get yourself a walleye, you catch it in one of the 10,000 lakes of Minnesota. And you let it sit a little too long in the sun while you're drinking Ham's beer.
Right.
And next thing you know, you eat it and you guys are...
I think what you're talking about there is a bacteria, a foodborne illness, but it's from bacteria, right?
Yes, exactly.
That's what I think. That can be so darn dangerous. Obviously, you can die from that.
You can literally die from it. Yeah, I myself have... I think I've only had... And I don't want to jinx myself, but I think I've only had food poisoning once. And I have eaten in every type of restaurant in the world. I've eaten very high-end places.
Ladies and gentlemen, he is not lying right now.
No. I am a restaurant guy. I'm a semi-foodie, but I'm not snobby because I don't have any information. But it's like I've eaten in the highest-end restaurants in the world, and I have eaten from places on a corner... And none of that stuff has ever fingers
because you
wood.
Have a stomach of iron.
I think do.
And the reason why we're talking tonight about food poisoning is because our guest, the very talented writer and animator, John Mathot.
Mathow? His name is Mathow?
No. It's Mathot.
Mathot.
He's here with us tonight, and he has a story about food poisoning.
And he is wearing a diaper, so this may be a very recent story.
And we're going to hear your story about food poisoning.
Well, just that weirdly enough, so I'm at work, and I'm in the break room, and there's like 7-layer dip, and I'm a sucker for free food. And I get it out of the fridge, and I'm eating it, and I'm like,
Expiration date?
And somebody says, no, it was homemade.
Oh, boy. Even
and somebody
worse.
Says, yeah, that was from last week. And I'm tasting it, and it's a little funky, but I'm like, I'm sure it's okay. Now, like an idiot.
Oh,
like,
gosh,
I have no idea how long it was out of the refrigerator the previous day.
Oh, my gosh.
Anyhow.
My stomach is turning.
Was it
chilled? Was it chilly or was it warm?
No, it wasn't. It's right out of the refrigerator when I ate it. That doesn't mean it hadn't spent 8 hours out of the refrigerator the day before or 2 days before. So
right.
I don't know. I just sometimes my inherent Midwestern cheapness gets the better of me. I'm like, well, it's free.
Oh,
so
my
that
gosh.
Was and I just spent the day on the bathroom toilet.
At work.
No. It was until the next day. I woke up and I went, oh, boy. You know, you get up in the morning and you do your business.
Okay, I don't want to get personal, but
no,
okay.
No, you know, you're like, oh, okay. And you're like, well, this will be fine. It's, wow, this is taking quite a while. It's been an hour? I was like, all right. So that was, I'm saying, I have an iron cast stomach, but even it can be compromised.
Here's the thing, you guys. If you get food poisoning, the incubation period ranges from hours to days, depending on the cause and how much was consumed. So you might think that you might not even associate the symptoms with the item that you consumed that was bad. So you might think you have a stomach flu.
Yeah, it took me a while to detective, like Columbo. I had to figure out what the hell I had eaten. So this is later. And people are like, oh, I think I got food poisoning at this restaurant. But you could never be sure.
Well, I don't know. I have had food poisoning only once, and it was from a Bob Evans restaurant in Pennsylvania. Bob Evans, down on the farm. It's like a diner, but they geared more toward biscuits and gravy, and the waitresses all looked like old-time prairie women.
Like they just got out of the cast of Oklahoma.
With bonnets, exactly.
With bonnets, yeah. I think it's also very big that's Tim Hortons.
That's in Ohio thing.
That's in Ohio
thing. No, just a little further east in Pennsylvania, the cooks have to wear those ties. I think they wear bolo ties, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That right there would put me off the
anyway,
bolo
so
tie.
I had the biscuits and gravy, and then I went to work that night. I was a waitress at the time.
Yeah.
A Tequila Junction. That's right. A Mexican restaurant in Pittsburgh. This story just gets better and better.
God, everything about this makes me want to poop.
And I was taking out a margarita and a side of guac, and all of a sudden it hit me. And just like you said, you know, you just go down. But that had only been a couple of hours. So that incubation period was very short. But I never thought to go to the hospital. Like, when would you go to the hospital?
Yeah, I mean, especially as a man, I'm like, I don't need to go to the hospital. It would be really... It would be days. It would have to be days where I'm like, I'm drained. I haven't eaten anything. I'm pale. And it would take a lot for me to go to the hospital with a stomach flu.
Of course, a lot of food poisoning comes from improper handling, right? The preparation of the food and the food storage during and after they cook it.
Yeah, it's amazing to me how that's why I'm like, I'm amazed I haven't had it more because of all the restaurants I've been to.
And you eat a lot,
right. It's like I think the human body is more resilient than we give it credit for.
Do you remember mad cow disease?
Yeah.
What happened to that?
Supposedly it's gone. But, you know, we might just...
Well,
but you remember when we were like, there's shark attacks every day. That was just because we were paying attention.
I see.
It's like...
I never worry about shark attacks when I'm not near the ocean, you know?
Yes. I know. I love how people in, Wisconsin and Iowa were like, oh, there's shark attacks. It's like, there's no fucking sharks. Here.
Okay, here's something I did find. In 2001, the Center for Science in the Public Interest petitioned the United States Department of Agriculture to require meat packers to remove the spinal cords before processing cattle carcasses for human consumption.
That's hot.
I know, but you know who did not want that to happen?
McDonald's?
Well, it was supported by some people, but it was also opposed by a lot of people, like the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, the National Meat Association.
Oh, those friggin'
the pork
cattlemen.
Producers, the Pork Producers Council, the Sheep Raisers, Milk Producers, the Turkey Federation, and 8 other organizations from the animal-derived food industry. So, see, not everybody wants to remove.
No, I know. That's because it would cost them money. But do you remember when the Cattlemen's Association sued Oprah?
Oh, no.
Our national institution, Oprah?
What did she eat?
Do you remember this? No, she said something about mad cow disease. She said, I will never eat beef again or some such bullshit. Like, who gives a shit? They sued her for, like, defamation. She literally had to do the show from Texas for, like, a month while she was in court.
She probably picked up her ratings in that region, though, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, are you guys crazy?
Yeah.
You're like, you're going to draw attention to, you think Oprah is so powerful? I mean, Oprah's listeners may have been like, I'm going to be like Oprah and I'm not going to eat meat at all. That's going to last about 3 days, just like the diets in your magazine and all the other shit. It's mm-hmm. all going to go by the wayside.
And the secret. Like, everybody had a secret, but it only lasted a few days. Then the secret went away because everybody knew.
That's right, because it wasn't a secret
anymore. Here's a question. Yeah. You like the 99-cent store, don't you?
I love it with all my heart.
But how do you feel about the produce?
Actually, I never used to buy that stuff, but it has upped its game. I have a friend, Robin Roberts, who is obsessed with the 99-cent store, but she knows all the, like, 3 99-cent stores around her in the valley. She knows the day they get their produce delivery.
Wow.
And that's the day she goes. Because you got to go the day of.
Yeah.
If you go the day of and you buy it, you're like, okay, because I got a red pepper I bought at the 99-cent store. Funny you should say that. About a week ago. And it was like, this is beautiful. I haven't opened it. I haven't cut into it yet. And today I looked at it. I was like, why is there a dead man's skull? Inside? Why is there a shrunken head inside my refrigerator?
Because you bought a red pepper just, you're never going to eat.
You got to eat it right away.
You not only have to buy the fruits and vegetables, you must eat the fruits and vegetables.
Yes. Yeah, I don't go for the frozen stuff because it's always some bizarre, like, you know, Saudi Arabian waffles. And you're like, I don't think that they're really into the waffle. But you know what, by the way, 99-cent store, the best thing I've given getting there, bagel chips.
Bagel chips.
Oh, they got a million types of bagel chips, and
yeah,
I love them
well
all.
Worth it. Yes. Well worth it.
I love a good bagel chip.
All right, you guys. So listen, we've got a great storyteller coming up in about 2 minutes. But before that, we did want to mention to you guys that if you'd like to support Storyworthy, one of the ways you can do it is to head on over to our website, storyworthypodcast.com. Have you been there, Hannes?
I've been there. And you can click on our donate button. You can give us a one-time gift. You can give us a monthly gift.
Oh, why not?
That would be awesome if you give us a sustainer.
Another idea is we have the Amazon ad. It's a banner on top of the page, and it actually does pay us monthly residuals. So
yeah, so you just go, you click on the Amazon ad
before you shop on Amazon.
Before it takes you to Amazon, you buy the horrible, disgusting books that you're going to buy there, and the sex toys that you're going to buy.
It's all happening.
It's all happening, and then we get a taste.
All right, you guys, wherever you are, please stay tuned because John Mathot is on his way here. Next week on Storyworthy, we have humorist Dylan Brody.
I'll be talking about myself incessantly.
That's next week on Storyworthy.
Hi, this is Todd Glass, and you are listening to Storyworthy, and I'm proud of you.
And we're back. We're currently being escorted by security away from Dr. Noseworthy's office, and we are headed to the Rochester City Jail because apparently he's not as big a fan of Storyworthy as we thought.
I can't believe you didn't think he'd hit that button.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought just the worthy thing was going to be enough, and I brought Werther's Caramels.
Yeah, well,
which
that,
I thought would bring us the official candy of Storyworthy.
Especially
Werther's Caramels,
the one with the caramel and the cream that kind of swirls. That swirl, I can't get enough of that.
Yeah, you like the cream? You're like, okay, that sounded a lot worse when it came out of my head.
All right, you guys, we have a real storyteller here, and thank God, am I right?
Oh, my goodness. And he's got such an easy name to pronounce, too. This is the part that I really
John
like.
John Mathot, that's how
Mathot.
You say it.
Mathot. Right. So it's like math and zero together,
right.
Mathot.
He is a writer, an animator, and a storyboard artist. He has worked on us on over 100 episodes of The Simpsons.
Oh, well, see, The Simpsons, I mean, and Seinfeld, that's my two favorites.
Don't you just
right
want
there
to spend the night with them, like, right now?
I do.
I mean, just
I do
to talk and
the
talk.
The diaper is a little
talk
off-putting, but
and currently, he's working on Phineas and Ferb, and he's also worked on Futurama. So there's all sorts of talent in
this
person.
Oh, my God, he's all over the place.
He also co-runs a show right now in Los Angeles with his wife, Susan. It's called Horrible Movie Night. Have you heard this, Honest?
No, I've not. Sounds like it's right up my alley.
Actually, it's very funny. It combines audience participation with improv comedy and really, really bad films. It's a dream.
My God, where is that?
Is what it is. It's at Nerd Melt on Sunset.
All right.
All right, you guys, you can find him on Twitter at Horrible Movie, or you can go over to the website horriblemovienight.com. Wherever you are, folks, please put your hands together for John Mathot.
Hey, everyone. So, well, first of all, I'm going to say that you guys were unbelievably lucky to have your food poisoning during the day. Every time it has visited me, it has somehow managed to show up at about 3:30, 4 a.m., And so that reminds me, speaking of food poisoning, reminds me of a story. It's actually a post-food poisoning story where I had the food poisoning in the middle of the night. It was just this awful morning. At this particular time in my life, it was about 1999, and we were just about to start the first season of Futurama. I had was taking it. I had left The Simpsons. I was very excited. It was a great day. Everyone was that morning. We were all headed over to Fox, to the Fox studio lot, for the very first Futurama table read. For those of you who don't know what a table read is, it's where they take the script and all of the actors and writers and producers all sit around a table hence its name, and read the story. The jokes are kind of tested out. So really big day, really big day. So all of the Futurama voice actors were there. Some of them were not the final ones that we ended up on the show. A lot of the Simpsons, all the Futurama writers, a lot of the Simpson writers, the producers, the animators, everyone was there. I was not feeling so great. And since it was such a great, auspicious morning, they put out a really big kind of spread of kind of like breakfast and lunch. There was fruit, there was little sandwiches, cakes, you name it. They really put on the dog for us. I, unfortunately, since I was kind of coming off this late night food poisoning, wasn't really into it, but I knew I had to eat something. So I just kind of picked this half a sandwich and maybe a couple of strawberries and a brownie, but just very, just nibbled on each one before, just kind of not really that interested. So I took my seat. And so all of the main performers and executives were all sitting at the table. Then there was a lot of people that have chairs set up around the edge of the room. And there was a kind of a ledge table behind me. And that's where I put my half-eaten food, just like right behind me. So everyone's sitting around, and we're waiting for, at that point, the president of Fox Broadcasting. His name was Peter Roth. And so Matt Groening is there. All the writers, everyone is there. Finally, Peter Roth comes in. Hooray! Everyone hugs and whatnot. And it turns out that the empty seat next to me was reserved for Peter Roth. So, well, how about that? So hugs for Matt, hugs for the directors. He grabs his script, sits right down, and we start in. And when you start in something like that, any kind of the time that's a table read, it goes. And it's not it cannot be interrupted by, you know, Haley's Comet would not be able to interrupt a table read, a Hollywood table read. So we're maybe about a minute and a half in. And, you know, we're reading through. The jokes are starting to hit. And Peter Roth is sitting next to me, and I'm like, oh, that's interesting. About a minute and a half in, he kind of starts to kind of look around the room, turns around, sees my plate of half-eaten food, grabs it, and starts eating. And I went, but you can't speak out loud, and especially to a studio executive, and he just starts chowing down and ate the entire plate, a clearly half-eaten sandwich and a brownie with a chunk out of it with no abandon whatsoever. So I sat there and just kind of, I tried to pay attention to what was going on because it was a great script and a really funny day, but why did this just happen? Right. Afterwards, I spoke to the head of the animation company who was there and told her the story. And she kind of thought for a minute, like, well, if anything happens to him tomorrow in the press, you'll know why. And so the coda of this is that there is no plausible reason that this possibly could have happened. The only thing that makes even the slightest bit of sense to me is still crazy. The only thing that seems to make even possible sense is that maybe Peter Roth is one of those executives that is very paranoid about fan interaction or food safety or whatever. And maybe he has a food taster, so he's very used to seeing food like, oh, here's my lunch, and it has a few bites out of it. So that's how I know it's mine. But still, that is cuckoo crazy. So to this day, I do not know what possessed him to eat a clearly half-eaten plate of food, which we now know was snacked upon by a fellow who had food poisoning the night before.
Might be the kind of guy who goes through the hotel hallway, sees the French fries
no
on the
way.
Tray.
No way, honey.
Is like, huh, I could
Listen,
eat those.
Listen, that's the worst. My brother would do that. My brother would totally eat off of hotel trays in any hotel.
Yeah.
And I don't mean like stuff that's wrapped up and it hasn't been eaten.
Yeah.
I mean, he'll pull up the silver tray cover, see what hasn't been eaten, and then eat that.
That's scandalous.
That's my brother.
That is horrifying. I think this guy is just so important that it doesn't occur to him that he could have food poisoning, or the world is his oyster, or Fox is his world, whatever is in Fox. Like, if your girlfriend were sitting there, he would just reach over and started fondling her.
Yeah.
Like, no, I'm the president of Fox Animation. Whatever is in this building, I can eat or touch or whatever.
You're on my turf.
Yeah.
Sandwich, I'm not going to bend to your
Yes.
cleanliness. You will be in my tummy.
I mean, I can barely, I would, teeth marks on a sandwich would be a no-no for me.
Yeah, Hannes is really, I mean, you're anal about like hand washing and touching doorknobs.
I say, yeah, I have OCD right up until it interferes with if I'm really hungry. Like, I'll be like, this is horrifying. Store. But if I'm starving and I drop a really delicious cheeseburger on the ground, I'll probably just
pick that up and eat it.
I'll just be like,
so, John,
it sounds like there's a Venn diagram between that and the 99 cent store as well.
Yes, I think that there is.
What caused your food poisoning?
Let's see, that time, I don't know if it was that, I actually don't remember what it was that time. There is an amusing one.
Wait, previously, how many times have you had food poisoning? Because we both had it once.
And I've had it three times.
Why? Oh. What? Well, yeah.
There was that time, which I don't, I know, I have to stop eating. No, three times out of like those thousands of times. Well, the one time, actually there was a pizza restaurant right down the street from the school where my kids go. Called, what was it called?
Michelangelo's. Nikki D's.
Nikki D's.
Wood-fired pizza.
Yes. My wife and I both got food poisoning on the same night.
No, you didn't.
From that place.
I totally know that restaurant. No, really?
From salad. And it was awful because we were both...
Wait, how do you know it's from the salad?
Well, that's probably,
it's
not cooked.
We were pretty sure. I mean, like, yeah, there must have, that was our, you know, that's a uneducated guess. Just because you figure pizza, I mean, there might have been.
It's cooked. It's true. What's going to live through a pizza oven?
It's probably improper food handling of the lettuce or something.
So I'm so glad they're out of business. And I don't care if you're listening,
Nikki. No, are they out of business?
They are out of business.
Oh my gosh, I'm learning new things every second. Mm-hmm. No, I didn't know that. Okay.
We had to literally, you know, when there's one bathroom in a house and you're living with someone else. But sharing the bathroom when you both have an unbelievable immediate gastronomic need is pretty
that's horrible.
Is pretty intense.
That's if your marriage can survive that, then you know you're meant to be together. That's your soulmate.
Here's what you should have done with Peter Roth. I think after he reached over and took your sandwich, you should have just reached over and like nudged him and taken it back. I mean, what could he have said?
You're fired?
It would have been neat also to like just grab his hand really hard and just go shake your head. No. Steven Seagal-esque.
No. Yeah. Oh, really? Steven Seagal has a reputation for doing that?
He could. I'm just imagining like the badass action hero way of doing it.
Oh, yeah.
It.
And he especially would not want you to be between him and his food because he's getting to be gigantic.
Yes.
But I think, you know, even maybe more subtle, he starts eating your sandwich and then you go...
Bon appetit.
Okay. All right. Let's get down to why I really wanted to have you here today, John Mathot. The Simpsons. Now, listen, I know you worked on, and I guess there's many people that work on The Simpsons, and I know many voiceover actors who have done the show. Dana Gould, he's been on our show.
Amazing.
Amazing. A lot of, but you've actually done and worked with the animation. And as I understand it, and as I've learned, there's a lot of different jobs within that. So there's thumbnailing, there's boarding, there's cleanup.
Cell sounds very dirty.
I don't know what any of it means. So tell me.
What is thumbnailing?
Tell me what these things mean.
You pay a lot for that on Craigslist misconnections.
Dirty.
Well, the story, nearly all my time, on and off 18 years on The Simpsons, was spent storyboarding. So thumbnailing actually kind of is part of storyboarding. What we usually do, it's a locked script, and we will, I would usually just draw little tiny compositions in the margin of the script as I'm reading it, just kind of getting ideas for shots.
So let's even to go back one more second. So the first thing that happens is that Matt Groening or whoever's writing for The Simpsons, they write a script.
Yes.
So now they give that script to John Mathot.
They do.
And you, it's on paper. It's not on the computer. It's on paper. And you're going through it, and in the margins, you're writing ideas of what you're reading, or
just visual ideas. Yeah, visual little
sketches. It a two shot? Is it an over shoulder
shot?
Exactly.
Okay. Are we widening out to see? Are we widening to see something? Do we zoom in to come up with a joke? Because the storyboarding is such a great job in that you really have to have a command of so many different things. You have to be a filmmaker, you have to be an editor, you have to be a comedian, you have to figure out timing of jokes, the way your shots will work. Okay, like we have to show Homer just from his waist up because we're eventually going to widen to see that there's a leprechaun at his, you know, standing next to him, and you don't want to tip that joke. So there's so many different aspects to doing what we do.
It sounds like so much power that you have.
It's really great. You will eventually get notes along the way, but you're really visually pushing the boat off the shore from the script stage.
So you're drawing these little drawings. So on one page, how many little thumbnails do you think might be there?
Probably on a page, which is about maybe 30 seconds of screen time is probably about, I don't know, maybe like 17 to 20.
That's a lot. And what do you do that with, a pencil or a pen?
Usually I work in pencil.
And it, your choice, obviously. Mm-hmm. Is there a specific pencil you like? I'm just curious.
Yes, a Tombow number 2B.
Is that true?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I tell you.
You're turning me on right now.
Son of a bitch. I'm a 3B man. Get out.
Yeah, it's pencil. Pencil porn.
What makes it better?
Oh, good. Do your listeners really want to hear that?
I do. No,
we
I'm
do. We love obsessive weird shit.
The Tombow is a Japanese pencil. It's just really, as opposed to other twos, it just has a really soft. It's like drawing with a chocolate bar.
Oh,
it's just
wow!
Like, it's just soft, but not too heavy that it kind of gets a little. You know, your hand will smudge it.
Now and then you lick it.
Exactly, yeah.
I am very fascinated by this. So then you're in the Simpsons script. Each page is about 33 seconds of screen time. So the script itself is about 66 pages long.
It's about 45.
About 45 pages long.
And it's been less and less as they add more commercials and take more screen time away.
Right. Now it's like 21
yeah,
minutes.
It's like 21 minutes of 21 and change.
And it used to be what?
Used to be like 24.
Interesting.
Yeah, almost like 24.
So now you turn the page and you do the same thing to the next page. Mm-hmm. So now after 45 pages is over, you have made about 400 small drawings.
Pretty close. Actually, that's that would be about for the whole episode. They actually divide it up. They used to divide it up between, well, is it still? They used to divide it up basically between three storyboard artists. So we'd get about 7 minutes and change of the episode each.
And you're actually drawing each character.
Yep. We have to. It's unlike you've probably seen behind the scenes on the Disney animators and how every Disney animator gets one character and they have to, you know, someone will draw Aladdin. But we were on task to be able to draw any of the characters at any time.
Okay.
And even the weird ones, like Dr. Hibbert's wife. Mm-hmm. Impossible and ugly to draw, but we got to be right there. But
wow.
And then, of course, Mr. Burns is great to draw. Homer's great to draw. So, but you get what you get.
And not just the characters. At this point, you're not drawing scenery, so you wouldn't be drawing Mr. Smithers' dogs.
If they're characters, yes.
So if he says, you know, send out the dogs, Smithers, then you are drawing in a thumbnail those dogs.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh, yep. John. I'm truly so taken aback because it's something I'm very, I've been watching The Simpsons, you know, forever, since the beginning, and I know I've seen every episode, but I've never known the beginning to the end. So let's move forward. After you are done making these 400 drawings in a script, where does that script go?
Then I take those little tiny thumbnails, and they seriously are sometimes as big as a thumbnail. I will take an official storyboard page, which has maybe 2 inches by 3 inches is a panel. Mm-hmm. And that's changed since we've gone to widescreen. But the majority of my time was there was when every Simpsons episodes were more in a box than they were in a rectangle. And then I will take those and kind of flesh them out a little bit more, make them work in perspective and space, kind of make sure that the angle is correct, that the characters are the correct height to each other, also very important.
Yeah.
So there's all of those things. So you have to put even more of your acumen, your artistic acumen, into the stories once they get to the larger stage.
Still with the pencil.
Yep, with the pencil. This is, you know, the kind of pre-digital. I only went to digital, let's see, maybe about like probably like 6 or 7 years ago is mm-hmm. like when they were fully on board for digital, doing just the storyboards on digital. Now there's almost no pencil at all.
Right, right.
Well, that's sad.
It is a little bit.
No, okay, but go ahead. So then at this point, you've made the storyboard book, as it were.
Yes.
And now what?
Then once it's all approved, I'll take it in to the directors. The directors will look at it. They'll make notes. I'll go back and make some revisions. At that point, they take it and it goes to there's some other various departments that kind of need to look at it, the background department or the character design department. And if we've been if there's a character we've never seen before or a location we've never been to before, they will kind of look at my sketch and sometimes we'll base it on what I've done. So sometimes for example, I was one of the first people to draw Duff Man.
Oh my gosh!
So you know
they need a Duff Man with the city of like Homer versus the city of New York. When Duff Man comes to the bar, he hadn't been drawn before, and he just comes in and is like, "Who's ready to get duffed?" And I'm like, "Okay." They describe him in the script.
Yeah, no, the description.
So I'm
like,
"Okay,
what?
He looks like Bud Man, and he's got, and he has, and he's, and the, but the one thing they didn't say is that Duff Man starts throwing beers to the guys in the bar.
Like,
right.
Where are these beers? Are they in his ass? Are they in a bar on a backpack? That would have been first choice in his ass.
Yeah.
But so I just said, all right, well, then maybe he's got like a belt, like a bullet belt with them around his waist.
Yeah.
And that's where the beers ended up being. And
what about the hip thrusting forward? Was that in the script?
That was in the script. That was in the script. There are, you know, and this is not necessarily a bad thing. There are very few things that we get to add in joke-wise because there are so many writers and so many producers, so many eyes on that script getting it really solid and really together that every joke is honed and workshopped and vetted
and
so many
like
times.
Like you said, when you get the script, it's set in stone.
Pretty much.
It's done.
Yes.
Which is unlike any sort of live action sitcom would be. It's like while you're shooting it, they're rewriting jokes.
Yeah, because I thought that The Simpsons could stay topical in that it didn't necessarily go to the final product until a couple of weeks before it airs, which is why they could be topical on like the Super Bowl or something like that.
Yeah, that's something they can do. I mean, they can re-record
but you can
all the way up to air.
But yeah, you can. But the illustration's not going to change. They would illustrate it in such a way that like here we are at the Super Bowl. Now the dialogue might change. But the illustration is
so they wouldn't say Buffalo because remember the episode about Buffalo versus Phoenix, or when they moved to St. Louis or something.
Yeah, yeah, they it's like they do it in such a way that like yeah, because recording it's easier than there was that's an, like three people.
There was an episode where it was supposed to air right around just after the presidential election. Let's see, I think it was Clinton and Dole.
Mm-hmm.
So they knew that the episode was going to air then. So and Krusty was on stage for something. It's like, "Hello, Mr. President," and like, "Nice of you to join us. You know, I voted for the other guy, but I'm glad you won," or something. I think that was the line.
Yeah.
So what we had to do is we had to animate this balcony shot of Clinton and Dole.
Wow.
You know, two separate versions. They sent them both over to Korea and animated them both, and then had to when it came time to air, like, okay, just edit that Dole one out.
Put the Clinton in.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so.
That's another thing that sounds dirty.
Yeah.
Put the Clinton in. Let me tell you something. If I had a nickel for every time I heard that.
Yeah.
I want to back up, though, 1 second. So now you've done the storyboard. So far you've told us about what it is to thumbnail. Thumbnail or thumbprint?
That's right. Thumbnail.
And then you've told us what it is to storyboard. So now what is cleanup?
Cleanup is I don't do a whole lot of that in my job. The closest thing I get to clean up is I try to keep it a little rough before I go in to see the directors, before they make their notes, so that, you know, I don't want to tighten things. I don't want to draw the drawings really tight before they make their notes, because they'll say, I don't know that Homer should come in from this side of the of the thing. I think that Homer and Bart should come in, and they should come in from the other door. So then you kind of have to redraw the whole sequence.
Yeah.
After they make their notes, then I can tie it down a little bit more and make things a little bit cleaner, and you know, the character's proportions exactly right, the character's model, as they call it, you know, where they give us a sheet which has all of the characters how they're supposed to be drawn from the different angles,
right? And that's a style guide.
Pretty close. So the cleaner that it is, the easier it'll be for the overseas animators to
When does it go to Korea? When does it go?
It will go not long after the designers like I was saying, how the designers will look at it, the character or background people. It won't. Then they will. It's not long after that it goes to Korea.
When it comes back from Korea, that's when the voiceover artists come into play.
They actually record it. They try to record it before we even get started,
so that
we can get there. If we hear some acting from them, sometimes there's something in their voice that will like. Where Homer sounds extra pained, like, oh, okay, well, we can have him drop to his knees and grab his head here.
Yeah, now that I think of it, that was silly for me to think that the voiceover could be done afterward, because you have to match what they're saying to the animation.
It happens either ways, because they will record stuff beforehand, and some of that will go all the way to air, but they'll often have to ADR things, which is the matching the mouth movement
thing. They duplicate the record,
probably people have seen on online or various places out there.
Well, I think it's very impressive that you do this. And that you've gone on to other projects, you know, obviously Futurama and Phineas and Ferb, and then you have an entire YouTube channel called Big Mathot.
Yes.
Right?
That is true.
M-A-T-H-O-T. So Big M-A-T-H-O-T. You do all sorts of animation. Does it start becoming almost second nature to you? Or what is inspiring you to do so much new stuff?
Well, the Hollywood machine is just always inspiring. You know, you're here. People can get a show on the air. So why not give it a shot?
Yeah.
So I've done a couple of pilots here and there for Warner Brothers Online and also Cartoon Network. Some of the other things on my YouTube channel are some title sequence. I directed a couple of title sequences. I directed, unfortunately, actually, Fox actually, it's been on for a number of years, but Fox gave me a takedown notice for a Simpsons thing that I did for the now defunct Fox theme park in Australia.
Oh, wow.
It was a load-in to their Bart versus Australia ride, but it's all moot now.
There's so much different types of work. I mean, there's just so much involved in the Simpsons. You know, Hannes works over at Universal, and they've got an entire Simpsons land, as it were.
Very true.
And my daughter is thrilled. She loves the Simpsons. Mm-hmm. It's her favorite thing. Mm-hmm. She had a Simpsons birthday-themed party, and she thinks that Hannes knows Lisa and Bart. Because
I have pictures of
characters.
Me with Lisa and Bart, and when I took her,
the giant in the suits, right?
Yeah, in the suits.
They're not suits. They're whatever. Yeah, nobody listens
made
to my
out
work.
Of
yeah, they're
flesh of homeless people.
Yes, they're exactly. And so I have pictures of me and she's met them with here's me and Lisa, and she thinks that's Lisa,
so do your
which
kids
is the point.
Watch The Simpsons.
They've seen it off and on, but we haven't shown it to them specifically.
And so what about Phineas and Ferb? Tell me about that.
Phineas and Ferb is it's the show that I'm on now, and it works a little differently than most of the primetime shows like Simpsons or Futurama or Family Guy, in that it is an outline show. And what that means is that the writers, instead of giving us this 45-page locked script, they give us maybe a 2.5-page outline of what the show is like and what the themes they want in various situations they want to do, just kind of a general overlay of the story. You and a story writing partner will actually go in and you kind of break the story. That means you kind of break it apart, make sure that, you know, figure out where your plot points are
when
going to be.
When you change locations, when
exactly.
Big things.
Yep. And you get to write it. You write it and you write the jokes. So you get a hand in writing the songs. And then after all that, you have to go in and do all your storyboarding, all the stuff that I described for the Simpsons, like coming up with the angles and the shots.
John,
and
though, you
the jokes.
Are living the dream. This is fantastic.
It's really cool.
I am
super,
so happy
super
for
cool.
You.
Thank you.
You are a kid from outside of Boston.
Yes, I am.
You go to school in Rhode Island. Big, big, big shot in Hollywood. Here you are.
I'd say I'm a medium shot at this point.
Yes, but you have a lot of caffeine.
Fair to Midland.
Well, speaking of shots,
well, he's got the T-shirt, the graphic T-shirt with the short sleeve, plaid over it. So he is like very.
Did you design that T-shirt?
I am not. This is from a street artist named Skullphone.
Skullphone. That guy owes me $10.
You did animate the Sklar Brothers Country T-shirt.
If you can animate a T-shirt, yes, I definitely animate.
Illustrate, I believe, would be the.
No, I like that.
Hey,
I love the idea of an animated T-shirt.
It's like Harry Potter. It's like the paintings
moving in front of you. Hey, you want to play some Shotgun Storyworthy?
Most assuredly.
Music can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the Storyworthy Wheel of Truth and tells a true one-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
Vacation. All right, well, vacation... Let's just dive into something. Vacation reminds me of going to visit my grandparents in New Jersey. They lived in Red Bank, New Jersey, which was not too far from some of the beaches. We would go to Asbury Park and go on the boardwalk when there actually was like a cool boardwalk and an actual arcade with arcade games and an arcade, the old-timey one, which I was – me and my brother were very, very disappointed. Like, we're going to go to the arcade on the Asbury Park boardwalk. But no, it's just a building that has an arched roof and no doors on either end. I'm like, oh, that's boring. I don't want to go to an arcade they built in the 1800s. I want to go to the ones with video games. Yeah, we had a lot of fun there. And the, another beach that we would go to in New Jersey was Manasquan. And Manasquan, it's kind of like a neat beach. Yeah, and like this, the total like New Jersey sounding, but also Native American sounding. Just very disparate sounds. And we had, and to this day, I got a souvenir from the Manasquan beach that is one of the strangest kid things that I've ever gotten. It was a comb, and it was very wide. It's a very wide comb, shaped like a guitar, like a big, fat, like maybe Gretsch guitar. And it said Manasquan printed right in the middle. And on the bottom, though, it was a comb. But the surface area of the comb was probably about a quarter inch into this, perhaps, you know, like 3-inch comb. It was the most uncomfortable comb in the world. There was all of this plastic residue in between each of the teeth or tines, I guess it would be. That's a fork. So it would just tear chunks of hair out when you would try to comb your hair. And just I still have it. It's great. I try to imagine the meetings and focus groups that this little thing was born from. Like, okay, people want to remember their trip to the Manasquan Beach. What do they want to like? Well, people like guitars. People like the beach. Were there any guitars on the beach? No, that's okay. Keep going. And what else do people do? Well, when the beach, you know, the sand and the air, they your hair gets all messed up. You need to comb your hair. So how about we make that guitar into a comb? Great, gentlemen. Are we all in agreement? Absolutely. Okay. Where do we send it? Do we send it to that place in Sayreville where they'll make really great combs? No. Let's send it overseas where they make shitty combs where you can't comb your hair. In fact, your hair will be pulled out by this comb. Gentlemen, are we in agreement? Absolutely. How much are we going to save on this? Approximately 5 cents. No problem. Let's go for it. So thankfully, because of that meeting and those knuckleheads, I have this wonderful comb from Manasquan, New Jersey.
John Mathot, you're the one with the comb. I mean, you kept it.
That's right.
It must have some value.
People are going on eBay right now looking for that.
Yes, they want it. They want it bad.
Where's that Manasquan comb?
And listen, I hope you don't get any more food poisoning. I hope that's behind you.
Thank you.
Yeah, my gosh.
Behind you.
Better than in front of you.
That's hey, listen, thank you so much for breaking that down for me about The Simpsons, and it's just fascinating. I'm really interested.
Yeah, it's a gas. It's funny how it's so different than Phineas and Ferb. I mean, if anything, like I was saying, how on The Simpsons you have to use all of those artistic, you know, proclivities to make the show, to be successful at what you do. And then how Phineas and Ferb just added on again. So you have to be
Isn't that interesting in terms of in art in general in Los Angeles, how it just, you don't see what's coming next, you know? And then next thing you know, there's podcasts.
Very
and then
true.
They're doing those podcasts twice a week. You know what I mean, Hunt?
It's crazy talk.
But things just keep rolling and developing. And I think every time there's a new development, I think, well, why didn't we do that before? Well, I don't know, but we better keep moving forward. Right?
It's very true. Yeah.
Moving and shaking, as it were.
And you have to kind of look for those things, too, because a lot of those old animators who animated with pencil were kind of blindsided by it. And if you really want to continue in the business, you kind of have to keep an eye on some of that stuff. And then some of those animators didn't want to. I mean, some of them have actually
don't
want to go into the computer or learn how to do that. There are some of those really great animators from the late 90s, mid 90s, who did retrain and are some of the top animators, like on Frozen. I can't remember his name right now, but one of those animators was an animation supervisor on Frozen and knows how to do Maya and all that.
Yeah, I mean, it's like one of those weird jobs that, like, you know, when people used to do advertisements. It's like there was a copywriter and then there was the guy who put the art together. We were cutting and pasting for you kids out there. It used to actually literally mean cutting a piece of paper and pasting it. And like people just think of it as as now it's,
but it's
the
progress,
name of something.
And we're moving ahead, and you know, it's exciting that things keep getting better and cleaner, and it's there's more content than ever and more opportunity.
Absolutely.
Roll with the punches, you know what I mean?
That's right. Roll with the animated punches.
Animate this.
Oh, for those of you who are listening at home, Hannes actually punched me. He struck me.
Hey, listen,
he did. Give me the comb, nerd.
Let me look at this contract. Oh, it's in
all
there.
Right.
He actually can strike the guests.
All right, you guys, we're going to wrap it up right now. Thank you so much for coming, John Mathot.
Yeah, and for those of you who are in Hollywood, I hope you come to Horrible Movie Night.
HorribleMovieNight.com. You can also find him on Twitter at Horrible Movie. And on behalf of everybody here at Sideshow Network, including Anthony Bench and Sean Merrick, and of course, John Thomas Griffith. You know, he's the guy that wrote our theme song, Follow Me.
He is, and he is actually a living cartoon. He's like Roger Rabbit. That's what's weird about him.
And on behalf of our storyteller tonight, John Mathot, and you, Hannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schleichinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore. Because it's here. And it's funny. And I love you.